and now the revel gradually broke up. The old farmers gathered together their families and their wagons, which could be heard for some time, rattling along the hollow roads and over the distant hills. Some of the damsels mounted on pillions behind their favorite swain, and their light-hearted laughter mingled with the clatter of hoofs echoed along the silent woodland, growing fainter and fainter until they gradually died away. And now the late scene of noise and frolic was all quiet and deserted. Ichabod alone remained behind in the custom of country lovers to have a tete-a-tete with the heiress, being convinced he was on the high road to success. What happened at that interview I cannot tell, for in truth I do not know, but something I fear me had gone wrong, for he certainly issued forth at no very great interval, all deject and chop-fallen. Without looking to the right or to the left to the scene of rural wealth over which he'd so often gloated, he went straight to the stable where, with many a hearty kick and cuff, he roused his steed most unmannerly from the comfortable quarters in which it had been sleeping soundly, dreaming of mountains of corn and oats, and valleys of timothy and clover. It was now the very witching hour when Ichabod, heavy-hearted and crestfallen, pursued his journey homeward along the sides of the lofty hills that rise above Tarrytown. The hour was as dismal as himself. Far below him the Tappan Zee spread its dusky and indistinct waste of waters, while here and there the tall mast of a sloop could be seen riding quietly at anchor under the land. In the dead hush of midnight he could even hear the barking of the watchdog from the opposite side of the Hudson, although it was vague and faint as to only give him an idea of his distance from this faithful companion of man. Now and then the long, drawn-out crowing of a cock accidentally awakened sounded far, far off from a farm away among the hills, but it was like a dream within his ears. No sign of life stirred near him, but occasionally the melancholy chirp of a cricket, or the guttural twang of a bullfrog, as if sleeping uncomfortably and turning over suddenly in its bed. And now the stories of ghosts and goblins which he'd heard in the afternoon came crowding in upon his recollection. The night grew darker and darker, the stars seemed to sink deeper into the sky, and occasionally driving clouds hid them from his view. He'd never felt so dejected and alone. Moreover, he was approaching the place where the scene of many of the ghost stories had been laid. In the center of the road stood an enormous tulip tree, towering like a giant above all the other trees in the neighborhood, and forming a kind of landmark. Its limbs were gnarled and fantastic, some as large as the trunks of ordinary trees, twisting down nearly to the earth and rising again into the air. As Ichabod approached this fearful tree, he began to whistle. He thought his whistle was answered. It was but a breeze blowing sharply through the dry branches. As he approached near, he thought he saw something white hanging in the midst of the tree. He paused and ceased whistling, but upon looking more narrowly, perceived it was a place where lightning had scathed the tree, laying bare the white wood beneath. Suddenly he heard a groan, his teeth chattered, and his knees smote against the saddle. It was but one huge bough rubbing upon another, being swayed about by the breeze. He passed the tree in safety, but new perils lay ahead. About 200 yards from the tree, a small brook crosses the road and runs into a marshy and thickly wooded glen known by the name of Wiley Swamp. A few rough logs laid side by side formed a bridge across the stream. On the side of the road where the brook enters the woods, a group of oak and chestnut trees, thickly matted with wild grapevines, cast a cavernous gloom over it. It is the very spot where the unfortunate Andre had been taken captive, the chestnut and vines concealing the sturdy yeoman who surprised him. Ever since then, the stream has been considered haunted, and fearful are the feelings of any schoolboy who must pass this place alone after dark. As Ichabod approached the bridge, his heart began to thump. Summoning all his courage, he gave his horse half-score of kicks in the ribs, attempting to dash briskly over the bridge. But instead of starting forward, the perverse old animal made a lateral move and ran broadside into a fence. Ichabod, whose fears were increased by the delay, reined on the opposite side and kicked lustily with the contrary foot. His steed started, it is true, but only to plunge to the opposite side of the road into a thicket of brambles and alder bushes. The schoolmaster now bestowed both whip and heel upon the starveling ribs of Gunpowder, who started forward snorting and snuffing, only to come to a stand at the bridge so suddenly that he nearly sent his rider sprawling over his head. Just at that moment a plashy tramp by the side of the road caught the sensitive ear of Ichabod. In the shadow of the grove, on the margin of the brook, he beheld something huge, misshapen, black and towering. It stirred not, but appeared gathered up in the gloom, ready to spring upon the traveler. The hair of the frighted pedagogue rose upon his head in terror. What was to be done? To turn and run now would be too late, and besides, what hope of there was escaping ghost of goblin, if such it be, which could ride on the wings of the wind? Summoning a show of courage, he demanded in a stammering accent, "Who are you?" He received no reply.
He repeated his demand in a still more agitated voice. No answer still. Once more cudgeling the sides of old gunpowder and closing his eyes, he broke forth with involuntary fervor into a psalm tune. Just at that moment, the shadowy object of alarm set itself in motion and with a scramble and a bound stood at once in the center of the road. It appeared to be a horseman of large dimension mounted on a black steed of powerful frame. It gave no offer of molestation or sociability, but kept aloof on the side of the road, jogging along on the blind side of old gunpowder, who had by now recovered from his fright and waywardness. Ichabod, who had no relish for the strange midnight companion, bethought himself of the adventure of Brom Bones and the galloping Hessian, and quickened his horse's pace in the hopes of leaving him behind. But the stranger quickened his steed to an equal pace. Ichabod pulled up and fell into a walk, thinking to lag behind, but the other did the same. His heart now began to sink within his breast, and he endeavored to resume his psalm tune, but his parched tongue clove to the roof of his mouth, and he could not utter a stave. There was something that was at once both mysterious and appalling about the dogged and moody silence of this pertinacious companion, and it was soon fearfully accounted for. Upon mounting a rising ground which brought the figure of his fellow traveler into relief against the sky, huge in dimension, muffled in a cloak, Ichabod was horror-struck on perceiving that he was headless. His horror was still the more increased on observing that the head, which should have rested on the shoulders, was carried before him on the pommel of the saddle. The schoolmaster now rained a shower of kicks and blows on the sides of old gunpowder, hoping by sudden movement to leave his companion in the dust, but the spectre jump-started with him, and away they went through thick and thin, stones flying and sparks flashing at every bound. Ichabod's flimsy garments fluttered in the air as he stretched his long and lanky body over his horse's head in the eagerness of his flight. They had now reached the place where the road turns off to Sleepy Hollow, but instead of keeping up it, Gunpowder, who seemed possessed by a demon, made an opposite turn and plunged downhill to the left. This road leads through a sandy hollow, shaded by trees for a quarter of a mile, until it reaches the bridge famous in the goblin story, and just beyond it swells the grassy knoll upon which stands the whitewashed church. As yet, the panic of the steed had given the unskillful rider the advantage in the chase, but just as they got halfway through the hollow, the girths of the saddle gave way, and he felt it slipping beneath him. He seized the pommel and endeavored to hold it firm, but it was in vain. He had just time to save himself by clasping gunpowder about the neck when the saddle fell to the ground, and he heard it trampled underfoot by his pursuer. For a moment, the terror of Hans von Ripper's wrath crossed his mind, for this was his Sunday saddle. But it was no time for petty fears. The goblin was hard on his haunches, and he, unskillful rider that he was, had much ado to maintain his seat, sometimes slipping to one side, sometimes to the other, sometimes bouncing on the high ridge of the horse's backbone so vehemently that he verily feared he'd be cleft asunder. And now a clearing in the trees cheered him in the hopes that the church bridge was at hand. The wavering reflection of a silvery star on the water told him he was not mistaken. He could see the walls of the church dimly glaring just beyond the trees. He recollected the place where Brom Bone's ghostly companion had disappeared. "If I can just make the bridge," thought Ichabod, "I will be safe." Just then he felt the black steed panting and blowing close behind him. He even fancied he could feel its hot breath. Another convulsive kick and gunpowder sprang upon the bridge. He thundered over its resounding planks. He gained the opposite side. And now Ichabod cast a look behind him to see if his pursuer would vanish in a flash of fire and brimstone, according to the rule. Just then he saw the goblin rising up in its stirrups in the very act of hurling its head at him. Ichabod endeavored to dodge the horrible missile, but too late. It encountered his cranium with a tremendous crash, and he tumbled headlong into the dust while gunpowder, the black steed, and the goblin and rider passed by in a whirlwind. The next morning, the old horse was found without its saddle, its bridle under its feet, soberly cropping grass at its master's gate. Ichabod did not make his appearance at breakfast. Dinner hour and no Ichabod. The schoolboys gathered at the schoolhouse, sauntering along the banks of the mill pond, but no schoolmaster. Hans von Ripper now grew concerned about the fate of Ichabod and the saddle. An inquiry was set afoot, and after diligent investigation they came upon his traces. On a part of the road that leads to the church was found the saddle trampled in the dirt. The tracks of horses' hooves, deeply dented in the road and evidently at furious speed, were traced to the bridge. And just beyond it, on a bank of a part of the brook where the water runs deep and black, was found the hat of the unfortunate Ichabod, and close beside it, a shattered pumpkin. The brook was searched, but the body of the schoolmaster was not discovered. This mysterious event was the cause of much speculation the following Sunday. Knots of gazers and gossips gathered in the churchyard, on the bridge, and at the place where the hat and the pumpkin had been found. The story of Brower and Bones and a whole budget of others were called to mind, and after they had considered them all diligently and compared the symptoms of the present case to them,
They shook their heads and came to the conclusion that Ichabod had been carried away by the headless horseman. As he was a bachelor and in nobody's debt, nobody troubled his head any further about him. The schoolhouse was removed to a different quarter of the hollow, and a new pedagogue reigned in his stead. Now, it is true that an old farmer who'd been down to New York several years later, and from whom this account of the ghostly adventure was received, brought home the intelligence that Ichabod was still alive. He'd left the neighborhood partly in fear of the goblin and Hans von Ripper, and partly at mortification at having been suddenly dismissed by the heiress. He'd moved to a distant part of the country where he kept school and studied law at the same time, had been elected to the bar, turned politician, electioneered, had written for the newspapers, and finally been made a justice on the 10-pound court. Brom Bones, too, who shortly after his rival's disappearance conducted the blooming Katrina to the altar in triumph, was observed to look exceedingly knowing whenever the story of Ichabod was related, and always broke into a hearty laugh at the mention of the pumpkin, which led some to believe that he knew more about the matter than he cared to tell. But the old country wives, who are the best judges in these matters, maintain to this day that Ichabod was spirited away by supernatural means, and it is a favorite story told about the neighborhood around the winter evening fire. The bridge became even more the object of superstitious awe, which is perhaps the reason the road was altered of late to approach the church by way of the mill pond. The schoolhouse, having been deserted, fell into decay, and is reported to be haunted by the ghost of the unfortunate pedagogue. And the plowboy, as he loiters home on a summer evening, often fancies he hears his voice in the distance, chanting a melancholy psalm tune amid the tranquil solitudes of Sleepy Hollow.